This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. This week, we've been asking experts about PFAS chemicals. They're the family of chemicals that have been found in drinking water sources in several places around the state. Today, we're talking to an expert on how to clean up PFAS chemicals. Tom Bruton is a scientist at the Green Science Policy Institute. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Lester. It's good to be here.
So we understand that these chemicals don't break down easily. They're so-called forever chemicals. Does that have anything to do with how difficult they are to clean up?
It does. There's a real connection there. You know, because PFAS are so persistent, a lot of the tools and tricks that engineers have for cleaning up water contamination don't work as well for PFAS. So, for instance, one technique that is often a good technique for cleaning up a contaminated site is to let natural bacteria or microorganisms that are there eat up the contaminants. But that does not work with PFAS because they're such stable molecules. There are no bacteria around, at least that we've found yet, that can break them down.
So they just don't break down in the environment. You researched one particular method of PFAS remediation. It's called in situ chemical oxidation, and it's effective on water. How does that work?
Well, you can think of it as a way of introducing a good chemical underground where the contamination is to react with that contamination and detoxify it. It's a little bit like adding bleach to your laundry. Bleach is an oxidant chemical. You add it to the laundry, it reacts with the stains in your clothes, the stains go away. The bleach doesn't leave anything too nasty around. So in situ chemical oxidation is a similar process where we introduce an oxidant underground and hopefully detoxify the contaminants.
How effective has it been?
Well, for certain kinds of pollutants, you know, some more run-of-the-mill pollutants like you might have dry cleaning solvents from dry cleaners or gasoline from a service station, in situ chemical oxidation is really effective, and it's used all over the country all the time to clean up sites. But what I found in my research was that it's no surprise it's not as effective for PFAS because these compounds are so stable. What I found is that in situ chemical oxidation can work sometimes to break down some PFAS, but in order to get this process to work, one has to pump a lot of chemical into the ground and use really harsh conditions. So for all but the worst contaminated sites, it's not going to be the silver bullet.
We know the Air Force is using some kind of a system on the plume of contamination in a groundwater source in and around the closed Wurtsmith Air Force Base. How do you clean up a plume of pollution? I mean, as I understand it, they suck the water out of the ground, and they do something to it, and they put it back into the groundwater.
That's basically right. You know, in an ideal world, we would be able to clean up all of the contamination that's in the aquifer. You know, we would be able to clean up all of the pollutants in the vast amount of water that's underground. But it turns out that that's really hard. And so what happens most of the time is that we focus on the water that's coming out of the aquifer, like you said, like water that is water that we can pull out with pumps and then run it through some sort of treatment process. Most of the time for PFAS, what's happening is that water is being pumped out of the ground and run through a carbon filter, sometimes another kind of filter called an ion exchange filter or reverse osmosis filter, and then that water is cleaned and often pumped back into the ground, sometimes released into a stream or a lake.
So if you've got a big plume like we have around the Wurtsmith Air Force Base or some of these other sites, are we looking at filtering groundwater for years or decades, or how does that work?
I'm afraid the answer is that it's going to be a long time, yes, because the fraction of the total amount of groundwater that's being pulled out by these pumps is small. And in order to pump out all of that groundwater that's down there, that I think it's a plume that's, you know, a half mile long or something on that order, it could possibly take decades. You know, these are called pump-and-treat systems, and there are pump-and-treat systems that have been running for decades to clean up contaminated plumes. It's not a fast solution.
So we're talking about chemicals that don't break down, so we can't do that. It takes forever to clean them up in this fashion. It sounds like this is going to be a tough job ahead of us.
I think so, yes. And the last I've heard is that the Department of Defense has budgeted or estimated that their liability for cleaning up PFAS runs into the billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm. Some of these PFAS chemicals are called long chain and some are called short chain. What does that all mean?
Well, it has to do with the amount of carbon atoms that are in these chemicals. The original PFAS that were produced and used for a long time throughout most of the 20th century were so-called long-chain PFAS. These are chemicals that for the most part, contain 8 carbon atoms all attached in a chain. And this is chemicals that you've heard of, like PFOA and PFOS. Now, as scientists discovered that PFOA and PFOS were persistent and were showing up, you know, all around the globe in polar bears in the blood of most Americans, and that they had toxic effects, the manufacturers, with some arm twisting by EPA, decided to phase them out. And what they switched to were chemicals called short chain PFAS. So literally, they have a shorter carbon chain. The reason that they switched to these is that the short chain chemicals are less bioaccumulative. So they don't stick around in our bodies as long as the long chain chemicals. And that is a good thing. But that alone, you know, I would say is not enough to say that this is green chemistry or that these are benign chemicals, because a chemical can still have toxic effects even if it doesn't have a long half-life in the human body.
The reaction in Michigan by a lot of citizens is, what in the world is going on? Here we have another pollutant in Michigan. And we're finding a lot of these PFAS contamination sites because the state is actively looking for them.
Right.
So it looks like Michigan's suddenly a hotspot for PFAS, but most states are not looking for them, so they could have just as big of a problem. So if you were to grade Michigan's efforts in tackling the PFAS contamination problem, A to F, what kind of grade would you give the state?
Oh, that's a tricky question. You know, I've followed the news some, and I do think that Michigan is doing more than nearly any other state to, you know, uncover stones, figure out where the PFAS are, and start to address it. On the other hand, I know that there was some study and some reports written about this looming threat of PFAS contamination in Michigan a number
right.
of years
Six
ago,
years
and,
ago.
And that
yeah.
wasn't really addressed. So, if you had to ask me, I guess I'd say a B.
Hmm. I think that's better than most citizens will give it at this point.
I recognize that. But looking as I am at the country as a whole, there are not a lot of states that are doing more.
Tom Bruton is a scientist at the Green Science Policy Institute and has done research on cleaning up PFAS from water. Thanks very much for taking time to explain this to us.
You're welcome, Lester.